This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
For goodness sake, Kith, keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
I mean, I'm not just an overrated general. I am the greatest, the world's most overrated. And this is in no small part. I will tell you, I owe New York. I owe New York for this because, Senator Schumer, have I thanked you for bringing my name up in a rather contentious meeting in Washington where this grew out of. So I would just tell you, too, that I'm honored to be considered that by Donald Trump because he also called Meryl Streep an overrated actress. So I guess I'm the Meryl Streep of generals. And frankly, that sounds pretty good to me.
I think General Mattis is very funny.
I love him.
I am very amused by General Mattis. Do you guys ever pay attention to the Alfred Smith dinner? Have you ever seen that?
I don't think so.
Yes, but not close attention.
Some of the funniest things from people who are like, you don't think that they could go into a place like that amongst all these politicians and all of these, you know, pundits. I know Brian Kilmeade was talking on the air about being there last night, and he was sitting two seats away from Chuck Schumer. He's crapping on Chuck Schumer all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to be able to be in there and just, you know, hey, how are you? Clink. Cheers. Let's make fun of each other. Let's get Gabe.
Knowledge is power.
It's not rocket science.
But he is a rocket scientist. Gabe, how are you?
I'm doing great. Good to be here.
Everything here is calm and collected.
Mm-hmm.
Well-oiled machine.
Everything's copacetic. Yeah. Come on.
Right before the mics went on, nobody was running around with their hands in the air.
I actually had to take a deep breath and remind myself to never run to a microphone. It was too late.
I was screaming,
Let me just, 1 minute. Yeah. She had 1 minute to the Annie Fry Show. Reminds me of Tony Colombo. Prepare the children. CNN right now literally says GOP's Kasich. They have given Kasich back to the GOP. Trump deserves to be impeached. I mean,
didn't we trade him?
Gabe. Gabe.
Is he still
is
GOP?
Is this news?
No.
What does CNN stand for? Cable News Network, right? I know what other
that's,
people are
that's debatable.
For. This yeah. isn't, that's that is an opinion. And if it said Kasich, colon,
right.
Trump deserves to be impeached, that's a news report.
That's fine.
When you add in there GOP apostrophe S, mm-hmm. Kasich,
yep.
you have made a statement.
Yes.
You have served it up with too much salt on it. Too much flavor. Keep it and let me handle this the way I'm supposed to.
The fascinating thing about news is that, you know, things you learn about in journalism school, I don't claim to have gone to journalism school, but I did take some journalism classes.
I have a communications degree. I have a TV radio degree.
But I mean, just in the journalism classes that I did attend, one of the things they talked about was how you grab...
You say that, like, were you enrolled in those classes or did you just like drop in?
I just kind of showed up. No, I'm kidding. No, they were part of my science writing minor.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, so I could do science journalism if I wanted to on the side. But one of the things they talked about was capturing attention through narrative. You know, you create a story, and you use the information that you have to create that narrative, right? So what the journalists that we see now have done, they've turned the narrative portion of journalism into something else entirely. They've basically turned it into the fictionalized propaganda version of what it really was intended to be. And they craft these narratives and they doctor their language. They decide what it is they're going to report, how they're going to report it in order to build the narrative. And you see it every day.
It's destructive.
It's extremely destructive, especially when you have people like, what's his name? The CEO of CNN or...
Zucker,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Coming through saying, this is what the narrative shall be, mm-hmm. right? From on high.
Focus on impeachment.
Focus
that's what he said.
On impeachment. So that's the narrative. So everybody... From the big highest paid reporter on down to, you know, the person they're throwing out there in the middle of a thunderstorm, you know, to report on the damage, has to feed to that narrative
mm-hmm.
in order to keep their job or in order to keep their boss happy and all that stuff. So it's just like, what are we doing? What are we doing right now?
You know, is it just naive to think that journalism actually can be completely unbiased? I mean, even in our greatest days, when Walter Cronkite or whoever you want to hold up as the mantle of being the exceptional, unbiased journalist, they're not. They weren't. In fact, using him as an example, I saw him speak during George W. Bush's presidency. Mm-hmm. Now, he was out of the game by then, but he was still doing campus tours. He was so biased, I couldn't believe it. And he wasn't even hiding it. Yeah. I mean, he was just saying, look, the man that we have in the White House right now is a war criminal.
Yeah.
And we should be reporting on him worse than we are.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh, and you're the guy that everybody looks to as like this beacon, mm-hmm. shining light of unbiased journalism.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't think it ever really has been.
I think the cloak came off in the 60s with... who was it who declared the Tet Offensive a failure on the news? I can't remember. Was it Walter Cronkite?
Hmm.
But anyway, it was kind of the first time that a journalist kind of came out with their opinion, or, you know, a straight news journalist came out with their opinion to tell everybody exactly what they think of the situation. And this guy declared that the Tet Offensive, you know, which was a big battle in the Vietnam War, as a failure. To this day, people believe the Tet Offensive was a military failure when it was one of the greatest military successes in history. If we had continued the war, they would have surrendered. They told us this after the fact about a few years ago. So,
yeah,
journalism lost us the friggin' Vietnam War.
So the power of the media the power of the media is pretty strong.
Yeah,
and they know it.
Yes,
and in fact, I think until Trump got elected, they didn't think that they could be even challenged. I think they felt as though they were playing a one-front war here, and they were winning. They were winning all the time. I graduated from my communications school with a TV radio degree in 2006. George Bush was the president. Mm-hmm. George Bush in 2006, not a popular president, especially among left-leaning or leaning so far that you've fallen over college professors. And I was told in my journalism classes or my media classes, that it was the responsibility of the media to lean the opposite way of the administration.
I heard that.
To put a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where I agree with that, but it's not the practice.
Yeah.
You need to second guess everything. That's what journalism is. It's not taking anything at face value.
Ask the questions.
It's looking at everything and going, I need to know a little bit more about that. And when you're the advocate for the people, when you're the person who gets to have the microphone, the face-to-face, the access to be in places that average folks, the majority of American citizens, are not able to access, you have that responsibility to second guess everything. So if George Bush is the president and there's war and now there's an economy struggle and there's stimulus packages and there's questions about, you know, in 2006 is when the Democrats took over control. I mean, everything was going against this president. And I think that we often forget about how the media did treat the president. They made him stupid. They made him out to be an oaf.
Yes.
And then Barack Obama came in and they made him out to be a savior. Mm-hmm. So I understand the context of looking at the administration in a journalistic standpoint and questioning every single thing and getting to the bottom of every single thing. But the point of that exercise, of putting yourself on the opposite side of the aisle, the point is to expose truth. And sometimes the truth isn't what you internally, in your heart and soul and your opinion, wanted it to be.
Yes.
You still have a responsibility to the truth. In fact, that's the only thing that the American journalist, any journalist, but the American journalist here specifically should have, is that responsibility to always expose truth. And then when you hand that truth that you've exposed, because it's your responsibility, it's your profession, when you hand that over to the American people, they get to do with it what they want.
Yeah.
We have taken out in the way we consume journalist, research and information and, you know, air quotes, facts. It's an entertainment industry now, which I feed my family off of that. But you're listening to the Annie Fry Show. You're not listening to we're not rattling off news story after news story. We report news stories and then we talk about them. Mm-hmm. And you get to hear what I think about it. You get to hear what Gabe thinks about it, what Ryan thinks about it, what Katie thinks about it. That's way different than the fact that we don't necessarily have a singular place where anybody of any walk of life can go right now and know that they're getting straight facts. It's sad. And when you consider that that's the way I was educated in the early to mid 2000s, Obama takes office in 2008.
Suddenly that adversarial journalism went away.
Those same people who were being championed in my classroom for leaning left, where were they leaning right? So don't tell me this is not journalism. This is advocacy. And you need to present it as such. If you want to be an advocate for something, if you want to have an opinion show, go get one.
Yeah.
But don't do news.
Put your name on it. Put a face to the side of the aisle that you're on.
Yeah.
You know, don't ask the president what has enchanted you about the presidency.
You guys remember that? Kill me over this, but you could make a case, though, that right now it's almost more honest because their bias is so obvious.
No, I think that the reason it's more honest is because they're not the only game in town. It's because we have social media, you have bloggers who have opinions, but you have people, I mean, Project Veritas, again, I said this earlier, I think I said this morning when I was on with Mark Cox at 7 a.m. I don't, when Project Veritas starts, you know, putting gasoline on the fire and, ooh, we got something coming here and it's going to be huge, I go, okay, I want to wait and see what happens. Some of the stuff they've exposed has been groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been other times where I'm like, that's nothing we didn't really already know.
Right.
So I'm not like a Project Veritas groupie, but I do see what they're doing and I do appreciate it. When we consider the fact that we have at our fingertips, on our keyboards, on our phones, everybody is a journalist. Ferguson was a huge shift in the concept of how we report what is going on. Did you want to tune in and get the 10 o'clock version of your local news to find out what was happening? Or did you start listening to police scanners so you could hear exactly? I mean, that is as raw as it gets. It's not prepackaged and given to you in a 3-minute story so you can, you know, have your little scoop of ice cream or your glass of wine and go to bed and lay on your soft pillow. This is the police scanner that you can just Google and listen to online and you hear what's really going on. You can look at somebody who is, you know, we have people who were down there doing real journalism, showing what was taking place, maybe offering an opinion and a side on it as well.
As they get tossed around.
Sure. But we've got people who are down there trying to advocate for something who've served in office now. It's a real thing, and they are doing it in the absence of what the actual paid professional journalists haven't been doing. So I think that in that capacity, it has pushed the entities that are out there right now into reconsidering how they approach fact-finding and fact-exposing.
Yeah.
But I also think it's caused other people to double down.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, 'cause, man, you look at Don Lemon. I mean, Don Lemon is just one example of someone that, I mean, we all know that he is an opinion show, but for people that are relying on CNN or MSNBC or Fox, and that's just what they're looking at, they might not know how to decipher, okay, this is an opinion of Don Lemon's, or is this actual news?
Right.
So, I mean, that's just an example, I think, of someone that has a deep opinion show, but puts it under the guise of fact and information.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we could talk more about this. You can join the conversation if you like. 314-241-9797. 314-241-9797. We'll be back with your phone calls and Gabe Pfeiffer in studio with us in a minute.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
A healthy treat with the kiss of sweet right in the middle of your day. Ah, pocket raisins. From the fields of San Mateo, pocket raisins are vine-ripened and plucked at the peak of perfection when they're sun-dried and then placed in an old man's coat pocket. Ah, pocket raisins.
Oh my God.
From the makers of Old Purse Gum. Pocket raisins.
I got some of that right now. What did Jill Devine do when you asked her to read that?
She said, I got about a minute. Let's do this.
And she just read it like a true professional.
She came in and knocked it out.
How much was her talent fee for that?
We're in negotiations.
One pocket raisin.
Man, she's a bad negotiator if she recorded it before.
Yeah, she is.
Pocket raisins.
Did you hear my story yesterday about pocket raisins?
No, I missed it.
I had an old man when I was a little girl who was at church, and he would bring raisins to church and give them to kids. And he was the sweetest guy.
Sure.
Sweetest old guy. But he just gave us raisins.
Right out of the pocket.
Raisins.
I'm a girl who likes my whiskey straight. And I'm a girl who likes my raisins straight. Straight from the bottle.
Don't get now, it
did
twisted.
Did he have one of those little boxes in his pocket that he was pulling out of?
I never saw
it. Okay, yeah. It's still, I mean, you're still putting your fingers on my raisins.
There's no question that you are going to ask me now that I haven't already asked myself and decided I do not want to know what the answer is.
Never saw it.
Is the question, did you ever put your hand in his pocket?
No. God,
no.
Ryan.
For raisins. What are you thinking about right now?
Exactly what you were thinking about when you asked that question.
So long as he didn't ask you to.
No. As I said 8,000 times to make sure that there was no sort of any type of diversion from
Ryan.
The actual story was that he was a very sweet and kind man.
Yes.
And he would give us raisins. And they were delicious when I was a child. I would kindly refuse to take them now. But
is he still alive?
No.
That's,
which is why I hate to be talking about him like that. Because it's not at all where I was going with
it. He might have been one of those depression era people who just kind of squirrels away stuff.
He was the cutest, nicest, kind man, and he was really, you know, loved to be at church and loved to have the kids come up to him and say hi, and he's just like everybody's grandpa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did he ever try to feed raisins to the pigeons in the park?
Anyway, let's get to a phone call here. Let's see what Jenny, absolutely anything that you want to talk about right now, go ahead and join the show. Appreciate you calling in, Jenny.
Okay, I just wanted to comment about Mulvaney going on the news today. Or was it yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
But you know how he was talking about, he says, well, governments do it all the time, get over it. Well, he's referring to, and governments have always done this, like when we give money to, say, the different countries in Central America, you know, we say, okay, you need to stop the illegal immigration, or we're just going to take the money. You know, well, that's, I guess you could look at that as quid pro quo, but I mean, governments do that all the time.
Yeah, name me a business deal that gets done successfully where things aren't exchanged. Like, that's what business is. Like, and that's how we get things done. I mean, there's no dealings that take place between any two entities, especially countries, in politics where you are doing things for one another. The question is it the propriety of that? But we're investigating corruption in the 2016 election. Are we just supposed to not do that because one of the people involved in that corruption is running for president? Good grief, they didn't have that mentality towards Donald Trump when he was a candidate and when he was the president.
And then with the way some of the news stories came across was that he was trying to make sure that the money they were giving to the Ukraine country was not going towards corruption.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
It's like, you know, you need to investigate the corruption to make sure it's not occurring, or we're not going to give you this money just for you to use it for corruption.
Yeah.
But, you know, it, again, how you were talking about journalism has bias, and everybody has bias. I don't care what they say, because everybody's got their own opinion. So that's going to skew it towards bias.
Yeah. Jenny, thank you for the phone call. Thank you for listening. We appreciate hearing from you. It's the story is all about how you report it. Here's Mick Mulvaney. I think this is his response.
No, on the call, the president did ask about investigating the Bidens. Are you saying that the money that was held up, that that had nothing to do
Biden? No, the money held up had absolutely nothing to do with Biden. There's no question. And that was the point I made to you.
I imagine watching, like, because I watch a lot of White House TV shows, which I'm sure exactly like reality.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Where people are up in front of the podium speaking, and the people in the background, who these shows always make it seem like it's the people in the background who really run things, which I'd imagine is very much so the case in a lot of situations. It's kind of like how Katie actually runs the Annie Fry show in reality.
We do it together.
We couldn't do it not together, that's for sure. But where the questions start to trail off into this thing, and they're going, oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. No, 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 no. And then you got to, like, scramble and figure out how you're going to put that back in the box. And it's not easy to do, because we have a media that wants to, they're waiting for the opportunity to watch you fail blow
definitely.
It up.
They're trying to pounce at every opportunity. And it is interesting. I mean, the point of difference between negotiating an exchange on behalf of the country is one thing, and then trying to negotiate an exchange for personal gain, I think, is the other side of it. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that's what counts as the quid pro quo sort of definition that I think everybody has in their heads. The problem is, if there is an intersection on those things, where do we look on that? And to me, if it's pretty clear that there was something up with the way Joe Biden was doing business in Ukraine, him and his son. So the thing is, overlooking that simply because somebody's running for president doesn't jive to me. You know what I mean?
Did you watch the rally last night?
I saw portions of it.
Does it entertain you?
On some level, yeah, just because Trump is just entertaining.
Because he's Trump.
I was explaining this to my brother on the phone the other day, that Trump doesn't treat his rallies the same way other politicians treat theirs. Like, he's doing half of a stand-up routine on top of the political stump speech.
The Republicans said, I'm not sure I like this because my life hasn't been this way. But the Republicans play a much softer game. They really do. When all of our stars, and we have great stars, when they went to our Speaker of the House at the time, and they asked for subpoenas, oh, let's take it easy. Okay. I mean, I get that, too. She hands him out.
I get that, too.
Like,
he sounds
cookies.
Like he's self-auto-tuning. Yeah,
I heard a commentator who happens to be standing right there the other day, doesn't like us at all, but said, I've never seen anyone hand out so many subpoenas. I have people getting subpoenas I never heard of. I said, who are those people?
It does sound like a routine.
He's just kind of playing a part. And on some level, he's doing this conversational sort of style with his crowds, which is why there's so much participation, right? They're clapping, they're booing, they're gasping,
they're shouting.
It's almost on cue. It feels like it's on cue, but that's because he's asking for their participation in it. He's having a conversation with them, which is one of the ways he engages people, and it's one of the reasons why his rallies are like no other politicians we've seen.
He definitely knows how to play the hits.
But look at all those cameras. You know, that's like the Academy Awards used to be before it failed. You know why it failed? You know why it failed? Because they came after us. That's why it failed.
It failed
because they had stupid people saying horrible things about us.
You know that montage that we put together of Elizabeth Warren telling the same story about her uh-huh. pregnancy story?
Yeah. And I was visibly pregnant.
So I could never.
And then
never
administrators did what administrators back then did. Yeah.
And so whenever we played that montage, I said, I don't know. Trump is hitting what he needs to hit. He's saying the red meat things that he needs to say, but he's saying it every single time in a different way off the cuff. I couldn't imagine someone putting together a montage of the same story that Trump is telling each and every crowd.
Yeah, exactly the same way. Yeah, he doesn't do stump speeches necessarily. I'm sure he has one.
Yes, I'm
sure almost
he does.
Like as an outline basically for what he's going to do tonight. It's kind of like a jazz musician. They get a sheet that basically tells them where the chords are going to go, but they get to fill in everything
else.
And so each of their solos is going to sound different every time, each club that they play. Trump is the jazz musician of politicians.
Put yourself left of left. I mean, you put yourself way on the left side of this political spectrum for a second.
Hi, Bernie.
If you're there,
I just got evil.
Trump just drive you crazy when he's doing this, or do you kind of laugh with him?
You don't pay attention. I think it just doesn't exist.
I mean, you can't completely avoid him, though.
I think what we've seen from the people who are the far left of the far left is they associate opposition to their ideology as an expression of either stupidity or evil. Or
violence.
Or both.
Yeah,
violence on some level. Yeah, right. Exactly. You're spewing your hate speech at me. But so I think it's difficult for them to see the humanity, let alone the humor of their political opponents, which is why they get so
it's going to drive you crazy.
Up. It's going to drive you crazy. So it's like, look at him being so unserious. I mean, that's the reaction you would have just because you hate the guy.
Yeah.
And you hate him because he's doing things or he's expressing beliefs that are opposed to yours. And the only way a normal person could come to that conclusion is if they were evil.
Mm.
And that's sad. Mm. Sorry to bring the room down.
No,
quick. I'm depressed.
Well, it's the state of the country right now. It's people are 100% in and flocking to rallies in Dallas where people are standing in line for hours to only not get in because the event is at capacity.
Yeah.
And then they stand outside and then they're just happy that they actually got to participate in this massive event. Or they watched Hocus Pocus last night. Yeah. I wish I would have watched Hocus Pocus last night. I watched the debate and I was entertained by it, but I mean, seriously.
Yeah, you could have done something else better. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
We end up becoming police. We're policing these countries. That's not what it's about. We've spent $8 trillion in the Middle East. Thousands of American soldiers have lost their lives. Tens of thousands more have been severely wounded. And in all fairness, the other side has lost millions of people. Millions of people. Think of it. These wars brought mass chaos, instability, destruction, and death. Today, we choose a different path. We had tremendous success today. I don't know if you've seen.
And then he goes, like, he just
the same people pushing us to fight endless wars overseas want us to open our borders to mass migration from these war-torn and terror-afflicted regions. Their policies would import terrorism right onto our shores with American-issued visas. Oh, isn't that wonderful?
His cadence.
Yeah.
He could say anything in that cadence, and people would be like, what?
Well, I mean, you heard it right
USA!
There.
USA!
Yeah, you heard it right there, the response. It was like, they're bringing them to our shores. Oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
You know, boo, endless wars.
Yeah.
No. You know, it's kind of the same thing. It is really interesting. I think he's going to have his own chapter in a book of political science, you know, in a political science textbook. Mm-hmm.
It'll be a college class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trumpian politics.
Trumpian politics.
The other thing that, before we take a quick break here, the other thing that makes me laugh out loud a lot of times when it happens is he's mostly off script, but he has a script.
Yeah.
And when he feels like he's trailed off enough, he goes right back and then he starts making these like coherent, punctuated sentences. And then he'll say something like, he'll make a point and he'll go, wow, that's great. You believe that? And I'm like, that's not the first time you heard that, is that? Like, from your own speech. Or he'll repeat it. And he'll be like, that's right. That's right there. Like, he'll...
he's
reacting
to
his own speech and is like, this is great stuff. You guys hearing this?
His speech writers must be so mad.
Yeah. Or happy.
No, or happy. I mean, the people who get to write for Trump, you're just like,
you get it.
You're like, I need to make sure that the only words that are on here are the things that really need to be said. Really need to be said.
Yeah.
Because he probably quadruples the amount of time that the speech is written for.
Yeah.
Because he riffs so much. But you just pay attention to it. Every once in a while, he'll make a point and he'll be like, oh, that's good.
That's
and,
a good
and,
one.
And they're like, that's the first time you've seen that. That's fantastic. You really like that line. Didn't know he was going to say it. It makes me laugh every time. 314-241-9797. I'm working really hard on this webcam thing, folks. It's not up right now on the YouTube channel, but we are maybe trying to put it on the Facebook page.
Yeah, the YouTube and the Facebook and the internet.
A Facebook Live. I'm going back to my digital roots and trying to fix this. So if you haven't liked the Facebook page, now's a great time to do it because we might start streaming the show from the studio live there. Maybe. I mean, like, in theory.
Hopefully,
that's the
yeah.
idea. Facebook.com/AnnieFryShow, F-R-E-Y for the last name. So go search it, go like it, and you'll be the first to know. Even maybe before the people in the room. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Great to be with you today. Katie sent this to me the other day, and it's Thomas Rhett at, is it the CMAs?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Did that CMAs just happen?
Yes, they did.
Obviously. Mm-hmm. So, listen to, do you know the backstory behind this?
I'm not familiar with the singer that accepted this award, but basically, Kane Brown, the drummer, his drummer, passed away in a car accident. And so Kane Brown won an award. He was up there kind of talking about it and how much he loved the drummer. And then I think immediately afterward, this gentleman won an award and he had this to say.
Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you so much, CMT, for such an amazing honor. I don't know about you, but sitting in that seat over there watching the whole night, I was telling Ashley that I cried once during her bit. And Kane's speech, man, I don't even know if Kane's here anymore, but I just want to lift up Kane and his family, and I want to lift up his drummer and their family. I don't know if this is very conventional, but can I just pray really fast? Is that okay with everybody? Father God, we love you so much. Loss is something that we can't comprehend. And so right now I pray that you would be with Kane and his family and his drummer Kenny and his family and bring them peace that only you know how to bring somebody. And thank you for this night. God bless country music. We love you, Jesus. And in your name we pray. Amen.
Thomas Rhett at his acceptance speech, I guess it's the CMT Awards.
Mm-hmm.
There's some country fans out there going, it's the CMT, not the CMA. Yeah, CMT Awards. I stand corrected. And just taking that opportunity to do that is a bold move. I could be wrong. Are you going to see that at the MTV Awards? Are you going to?
I was just thinking, like, how would that have gone down at the?
You could, but it'd be booed.
I mean, I could honestly see it happening at the BET. I mean,
at the BET Awards.
You could see some people taking some people to church at the BET Awards.
Yes, I can see it. That's a good point.
So I want to not say that this is like specific to country music, but that is a powerful message and a bold move. And I just appreciate it. I think it's fantastic.
I think what makes it so significant and special is that no matter what award ceremony you're at, you never see someone dedicating their time to say a prayer.
No.
And especially to say a prayer that isn't like, thank you, God, for the award that I accepted. And
thank
that I have.
Right. Making me great. It's like, which is honestly like a Kanye prayer. And then what's going on with Kanye?
That's an old Kanye prayer.
I know. Mm-hmm.
That's not new Kanye. Mm-hmm.
But you never see someone that says a prayer for someone else for a minute or 30 seconds or however long that was. That's very, very significant.
That is definitely. It's because it's unselfish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. The awards have become very, very much a show about self-indulgence.
Yep. Self-aggrandizing was the word that was in my mind.
That's the other one.
Do you have the inside scoop on Kanye? Is this legit?
That's legit.
I love it. He's, like, every time something else comes out, I'm like, ooh, this is not the opposite direction yet. Let's put another page in the chapter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's really neat because, you know, people sat down with the pastor that you know, for some reason kind of developed this relationship with Kanye, and he...
Kellyanne Conway?
Yeah, I know. sorry. But this pastor is, I think he's like from Montana or something like that. Mm-hmm. So Kanye would fly out to have Bible study with him like every other day or something like just... And this was for months ahead of all of this stuff that we're
like
seeing
before
now.
He made this it a thing.
Before he made it a thing, it was a thing in his life. So this is basically just kind of the public culmination of a mm-hmm. journey he'd started months ago.
I think something that, or from what I've read, something that really changed Kanye's life was building a family. Yeah. I think he met Kim and he had this idea that he was dating this really, really hot woman and she was all of these things and that's great. But then they started having kids. Mm-hmm. And I think once you build a family and you have to realize in that kind of world and entertainment, there's a lot of stuff happening all around you constantly. And there's a lot of negativity and people are writing articles about your life, judging you. Mm-hmm. So you have to have an outlet somewhere that says you are accepted, you are loved, and your family is protected and okay. And I think that's what made him evolve into someone that really, really loves Jesus and holds him dear to his heart.
It's certainly a big push for it, yeah.
I think it is counterculture to be conservative or, I should say, and or religious and be cool with it.
Yeah.
I think that the rebellion that I grew up in the 80s and the 90s and
punk rock. Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, that is when you're rebelling against what the 80s were, you know, like the Cliff Huxtable kind of idea, the Reagan years. And you're going into this like, you know, we don't need to do what people say. There isn't a right and a wrong. We have gotten so far away from being able to draw a distinct line where right ends and wrong begins.
Yeah.
If you even dare draw a line, you get called a name. If you want to determine that something is no longer okay, you don't get to say that anymore.
Right.
And conservatives have had to bear the responsibility because, as I've said this many times before, Democrats label Republicans as the Christians, the religious people. Mm-hmm. And they, unfortunately, when they do that, don't acknowledge that by saying that you're a Christian person, that means that you're a messed up person. That's the foundational element to being a Christian, is knowing that you're not good enough.
Yes.
And having that understanding that there are things that are okay and there are things that aren't okay, that is determined in specific with a religion, that is determined by somebody other than a man or a woman here. What does our government do? Our government takes the place of God. Our government puts, you know, if you're not a religious person, I'm here to tell you that I am a Christian. I'll tell you why I'm a Christian. And you can take that for what it's worth and make a decision on your own. But make no mistake that the Republicans who happen to be Christians, they're not worshiping government like the Democrats do. Republicans who happen to not be Christians, maybe they're libertarians, they have nothing to do with religion, they too do not worship government.
Yeah.
And that's a platform of the Democratic Party.
That's the major point of difference, I think, between the parties right now is this reliance and worship of government and government power on one side, and then an acknowledgement of the individual, but a recognition that the power is beyond the individual.
Yeah.
I've heard it phrased as, who do you rely on to be your provider? Mm. Is it government or is it God?
Right.
And that's a huge question.
Yeah.
Or yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But that question alone, if I asked that question of you and you answered it, I pretty much know how you stand politically based on that one question.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, when you consider the things that are hurting society, what does every politician run on? What's their campaign? Their campaign is how they can make your life better.
Yeah.
And when you listen to what each of our main parties say, the Democrats want to get elected so they can get in there and make your life better. Republicans, if they're not swampers, when Republicans get in there, they want to give you the opportunity to make your life better by turning that responsibility back over to you and not saying your life is going to be better, but in these confines that I am going to determine for you, because I know what's good for you. And if you just vote for me, I'll make that possible for you. Well, how many Democratic-controlled slums and you know, impoverished areas?
Cities.
Yes.
Big major metropolises that are being controlled by
the
Democrats.
The consistency of that.
Yeah.
Electing the same people who are telling you what's going to happen if you elect the other guy. Could it get worse? Maybe. But has it gotten any better for you? It hasn't, which is why Trump said when he was running to black people, what
do you have to lose?
Yeah. And I think that that's starting to resonate in a way, not just with African-American individuals, but with anybody who is having their eyes opened up to the identity politics that have been played. And it's not that Donald Trump's policies are going to be that much different than a whole lot of other Republicans that have gone before him, but the Democratic mantra is, trust me.
Yeah.
I got this. Trust me. And when somebody says, but why would you trust them? And it's Donald Trump, and he says it the way Donald Trump says it, you go, well, let me think about that for a second. Why, what? Like, it's a matter of being engaged. It's not that any of these people were ever stupid. They were told to trust somebody who was persuasive. And then they trusted him. Nothing ever changed. So Donald Trump has at least gotten so many people to raise their eyebrows, and then they show up in droves. It really is amazing. Gabe Pfeiffer is going to stay with us here for the next hour, and you need to check him out on YouTube. Follow him, subscribe to him at St. John the Philosopher on YouTube, also on Twitter at St. John Philosopher.
At John Philosopher.
Every time! I need to change it again. At John Philosopher. That's John with an H. Go follow him. Follow me at Annie Fry Show. And like I said, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Annie Fry Show. We might be streaming live soon, or maybe on Periscope on Twitter at Annie Fry Show. I really don't know what's going to happen. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.